I've got to do one of these tests next week when I go for my driver's license again. I haven't lost my license or anything. I've just got to renew it, and I've got to do a eyesight test. And I guess it's important to not only me but our community that I can see properly if I'm driving on the road or the footpath or wherever I'm driving. I need to see clearly what's in front of me. I think we'd all agree that that's a good thing to do. When it comes to being a Christian, it's important to see Jesus clearly. If you are a follower of Jesus, then Mark 8 speaks to us very clearly about what it means to be able to see Jesus. He talks about three states. He talks about being blind to Jesus. He talks about seeing Jesus with blurred vision, and it talks about seeing Jesus clearly. And so we have a, as we have a look at this, let's turn in our Bibles, Mark chapter 8, and we start at verse 22, and this is where our story starts. A strange story about a strange healing. Jesus and his disciples come to Bethsaida, and some people bring to him a blind man that they want healed. And Jesus takes the blind man and leads him outside the city. I don't know if you think that's strange, but it is really. Jesus doesn't usually take people who want to be healed and lead them away. Why does he do this? Well, he takes him outside the city with his disciples. Now, Jesus always took his disciples outside the city quite a lot in order to teach them. He took them somewhere quiet, outside from everyone, and taught them. So the indication we'd have that the reason he's taking this man outside the city with his disciples is because he's going to teach his disciples something. And the hint is that he's probably going to use this guy to teach them this healing. And he does. Jesus gets outside the city with his disciples and the blind man, and he spits on the man's eyes and puts his hands on him. Now, I don't know about you, but I'd certainly be very glad I was blind at that stage. If someone was spitting in your face, you don't want to see it coming, do you? Jesus asks him, "Do you see anything?" Now, that's strange, isn't it? Jesus spits on a guy's eyes to heal him, and he says, "Do you see anything? Did it work?" And the guy says, "Well, I see people, but they'll be like trees walking around." Now, everyone could have been playing a huge practical joke on this blind guy, couldn't they? Could have been all been walking around dressed up as trees. Or the guy actually couldn't see properly. How strange. His vision was blurred. So Jesus then finally puts his hands on the man's eyes. And of course, his sight's completely restored. Now you can deduce either two things from that. Either Jesus couldn't do it the first time, or he was actually using it to make a point. Now, because we know Jesus is able to do anything, it's pretty obvious to us that there was some reason, some teaching point that Jesus is making by healing this man in two stages. Where that teaching comes out is actually in the passages that follow this that we read. He's actually telling his disciples about those three different types of people, those three stages of vision. You can be blind to Jesus, you can see Jesus but with blurred vision, or you can see Jesus clearly. They are the three stages that we can really see Jesus in. I want you to turn now to verse 27, and we're going to look at the blind seeing Jesus, or the blind not seeing Jesus, as the case is. Verse 27, let me read it for you. Jesus and his disciples went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say I am?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others, one of the prophets." People have different ideas of who Jesus is. Some people are actually blind to his true identity. They don't see who he is at all. When I was a high school teacher, 10 years ago now, at the age of 24 or so, students would often, any other high school teachers here? Yeah, I don't know if you get this much, but kids often ask you how old you are. And so I always say, not wanting to give away my age, lest it undermine my authority in any way, I'd say, "Well, how old do you think I am?" And most kids would answer something around the vicinity of 19. Which is quite nice. I like that now. That'd be good, wouldn't it? How old do you think I am? 19. That's nice. One child said 46. Thought I was 46. And another time at a parent-teacher interview, a mother came to me. She said, I've been looking everywhere for you. She said, I'm trying to look for you, giving my son's description. I said, well, how did he describe me? She said, he said, look for the old guy with the long hair. Now, I learnt two things at that stage. Long hair doesn't necessarily make you look younger. And secondly, children often have no idea of how old you are. They don't know your true age. And when people want to know or find out about Jesus, often they have a guess at it. Even today, a lot of people, a lot of whole religions, still see Jesus just as a prophet or as some sort of magician or some just really famous good guy who did lots of good things and taught people. And that's all he is. And those people are blind to Jesus' true identity because he is much more than that. Let's have a look at the next group of people, those with blurred vision. There are others who see a blurred picture of Jesus. In other words, they see him, but they don't see him clearly. Have a look at verse 29. Jesus turns to his disciples and he asks them, but what about you? Who do you say I am? And Peter answered, you are the Christ. You are the Christ. Now, this is a huge turning point in Mark's gospel. This is the first time that one of Jesus' followers recognizes him as the Christ, as the Messiah. We knew it back from Mark chapter 1, verse 1. This is a story about Jesus, the Son of God. But finally, one of Jesus' followers recognized who he is. It seems that Peter sees him clearly, but we soon realize that Peter doesn't actually see him clearly at all. Just like the rest of the disciples, they are like the blind man after the first healing. They see Jesus, but their vision is blurred. It's like the letters at the bottom of the eye chart. You sort of know they're there, don't you? But you can't make out what they are. Sometimes as hard as you try, I bet Lorna could see it all the way from up there, couldn't you, those bottom letters? But you know, the disciples are looking at Jesus. They see who he is, but they can't really make him out completely. Their vision's blurred. And so Jesus goes on to tell them the clear vision of who he is, of what the meaning of the Christ is, in verses 31 and following. He began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, chief priests and teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and after 3 days rise again. And this is where we realise Peter had blurred vision. He spoke plainly about this, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. When Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter. Get behind me, Satan, he said. You do not have in mind the things of God, but the things of men. Jesus rebukes Peter. You see, Peter understands that Jesus is the Christ, but he doesn't realize the consequences of that title. Peter doesn't understand that Jesus as the Christ must die for the sins of the world. He doesn't see that clearly, but Jesus must die. It is necessary for Jesus to die to fulfill God's plans. Jesus sees it clearly. He sees God's plans, but Peter and the disciples, they see who Jesus is, but they don't understand the consequences and what that means. They eventually do. Like the blind man, we know. You know at the start of that story, don't you, what's going to happen to the blind man? They brought a blind man to Jesus to be healed. Well, he's going to heal him, isn't he? You know that blind man's going to walk away seeing. And when we see the disciples here with this blurry vision of who Jesus is, we know that at the end of it, the disciples are going to understand and see clearly who Jesus is. And they do. The time comes after his death and resurrection that the disciples understand. And in the book of Acts, we see the church take off because the disciples clearly see who Jesus is. But at the moment, their vision is blurred. What about you? Do you see Jesus clearly? We live, of course, after the events of the death and resurrection of Jesus. We have the whole history of God's plan laid out for us. We can look back and see it all. But seeing clearly means more than just seeing everything that's happened. Let me suggest 3 things to see clearly. We need to know who Jesus is, that he's the Christ, the one of God. We need to know what Jesus has done for us in his death and resurrection. But we also need to know how that impacts our life. So if you want to see Jesus clearly, it's not just enough to know that he's the Christ. It's not enough to know that he died and rose. We need to know how that impacts our life. If we truly see Jesus clearly, we'll understand how the cross impacts our heart. That is a clear vision of Jesus. Have a look at verses 34 to 38. Jesus tells us exactly what that means. He's back amongst the crowd. He calls to him with his disciples. He says to his disciples and his whole crowd, he says, if anyone would come after me, if you're going to follow me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me and for the gospel will save it. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world yet forfeit his soul? Or what can a man give in exchange for his soul? If we see Jesus clearly, we understand what he means for our life. We understand his role in our life. We understand the impact that the death and resurrection of him means. He is more than just a prophet. He is much more than just a good man or a miracle worker. He's the Son of God. He's the Christ. He died and rose. But he doesn't stop there. To see clearly, we must understand the impact of that on our life. And that is to take up our cross, as we heard even last week, and follow him. You know, over Christmas, you might have seen something like this. The $32 million lottery. $32 million. I saw the ads. I heard the ads. They were all over the place. You know, I found myself wondering for a couple of minutes after that ad was on. And I don't remember what was happening in the rest of the world for that 2 minutes. So I just thought, sitting there, imagine what I could do with $32 million. Can you imagine that? The ads sort of give you this permission to dream all you can. Of what you could imagine that much money. Imagine that the people you could help. Imagine the things you could buy. Imagine how big a TV set you could get for that sort of money. I mean, gee, $32 million. But in the end, what have you got? In the end, whether you've got $32 million or you've got the world, what have you got if you don't have a relationship with God? What have you got without the cross of Jesus? Because that's where we're able to have a relationship with God. It's the only place that we are able to have a relationship with God. What have we got without that? Even if we have $32 million, what good is it without our soul? What good is it without a relationship with the Creator of the universe? If anyone will come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. So we may see who Jesus is and what he has done, but to see him clearly, we need to understand what that means in our life, the impact it's to have. Now, I guess most of us probably know that following Jesus means a life of sacrifice. I guess we know that that Jesus calls us to give up all we have, to consider nothing more important than him. I guess we know that. And I guess it's pretty simple to see that in God's word, in the Bible. But when it comes to actually putting that knowledge into action, that's pretty hard, isn't it? It's pretty hard to actually put it into action. It's easy to say that we want to commit to the ministry of our church, of God's church. But it's another thing to actually commit the time and the finances and the resources that are needed. It's another thing to actually take that step and make that physical commitment. It requires action. Could you imagine if Jesus talked about his death and resurrection, if he told again and again his disciples, I'm going to die and I'm going to rise again in 3 days. Imagine if he went on and on about it and how important it was and how necessary it was to save mankind, but never actually did it. Imagine if he talked about it on and never actually did it. It would make no difference. He would have had no impact, and we would still be in our sin. We want to read the Bible. We want to pray every day. It only took me about 3 days into this year before I missed a day of my Bible reading plan. I had to catch it up the next day. I'm on track now, 7 days in a row. I missed 2 days actually, caught them both up. Gee, it's hard. I want to read it every single day. I want to be at church every week. We all do, don't we? We want to commit to our church ministry financially and with our time, with all our resources. But the world makes it so hard to actually act on that commitment. The world makes it hard because the world tells us that it's good to have your own plans. I don't know, what plans have you got for 2007? I'm sure you've got something in the back of your mind, perhaps. Maybe planning children, planning to move house, planning to spend more time with the family. Maybe you're planning to lose weight, exercise more regularly, plan to work shorter hours. We may have lots of plans for this year, a lot of ideas of what we'd like to achieve. But the question really is from this passage, what are God's plans for your life this year and next year and the year after? What are God's plans? To see Jesus clearly means we understand that our actions need to follow our faith. We need to hear his plans for our life, and we actually need to follow them and act on them. So don't just talk about budgeting your finances better this year. You know, sit down, make the time, write out a budget. You know, that will be a good thing to do. If you think that's important, I'm sure you'll make time to do it. Don't just talk about spending more time with your family. Actually do it. Take that time with your family. If it's important to you, I'm sure that you're going to make the time to focus on your family more. You're going to make it happen if it's important. Who here hasn't changed their priorities in the past year to make their life clearer? Had something you wanted to do and you make it happen. You know, it's true for the things of this world. If they're important to you, you make the time to make them happen. You make those changes. You know, it's even more true when it comes to commitment to God. If God is important to us, then we will make that time for him. We will rearrange our life. We will reprioritize the things in our life. If reading the Bible is important, if praying is important, if financial commitment and time commitment to ministry is important, we will make that time. We will commit to him. We won't just talk about it. Here's three steps I encourage you to follow. Pray about your plans. Ask God what you should be doing. Share it with someone. That'll hold you accountable. Now, that's why we've got a sign-up list for those reading the Bible in a year, so we can encourage one another. And number three, actually do it. Ask God, be held accountable by others, and actually put it into action. Now, it works for the things of this world. When I made a resolution 2 years ago to spend more time with my family, I reprioritized things. And it worked. And changes happened. It's more important, even so, when we come to the things of God, to make those things a priority in our life. To not just say we're going to commit them, but to pray about them, to keep each other accountable, and to actually do them. To actually commit like Jesus did, by taking up that cross of self-denial and following him. God's plans are about self-sacrifice. If we're going to see Jesus clearly, we really need to understand how the cross impacts our daily life. We need to listen to God's plan, asking him what steps to take next, and then we actually need to take those steps.